Talk Comics on the air one more time. This is issue number 25, the 25th issue spectacular, or episode 25. We're not going to be specific about it. We like to think of it as issues because, hell, it's a comic book show after all. I'm Mo, and I'm going to introduce you guys by letting you know if I was to be a superhero sidekick to anybody, well, it'd be the Blob. I know he's not a superhero, but I could be the mini Blob. That'd be awesome. Plus, I already have the powers for it, called this tummy. Brett?
Yep, you definitely would be the wheat belly Blob. Yes, no question about it. Let's see now. If I was going to be a superhero sidekick, I'm going to choose a crazy superhero, and I would love to be the sidekick of the Flaming Carrot, because then you would get to do nothing but weird shit.
Awesome. Chris?
Drunken Welfare Man would be my aspiration to hang out with.
Does he exist?
Not in the comic books, but he had a short-lived television spinoff from a Canadian short-lived show.
Well, that works. Keith, who you got?
There goes Booster Gold. Try to mix it up, keep it fresh.
Something new. Something you never
he's
said
a
before.
Time traveler. He's rich. Hangs out with. He has his own super team. He's a man.
All right, that's cool. All right. Well, Keith, since you were last into the party on the introductions, when you go first in on your own segment, it's the weekly news with Cub Reporter Kit.
Well, we're back out of after a little hiatus on the news. We just did a news break last week, and there is a ton of stuff happening. I'm going to start with the San Diego Comic-Con went on sale a few days ago on a Saturday morning, and it sold out in 85 minutes of everything. It is the fastest sellout in San Diego Comic-Con history. I was able to get 3 out of 4 days. So this year I am going to San Diego Comic-Con. That's my second news piece.
And the most important one.
And, well, to me, yeah. It's on the.
Why don't we call this instead the weekly news on Cub Reporter K?
What have I been up to this week? Actually, that's been a pretty busy comic week for me. I'm going to San Diego. I've got some news at the end of the episode on some writing I've got coming up. Been a busy time. So moving right along with the news, David Mazzucchelli, he has come out in a very curious statement asking people not to buy the Batman Year One Deluxe Edition that's about to be released. He says that it is made from very inferior printing quality. It is on gloss paper. They're using coloring that he didn't approve. And he says that other versions that are already out there are much superior to the Deluxe Edition that's coming out.
I have a comment on that. Does anybody else?
Well, I have that hardcover that has Year One and Dark Knight Returns, which is fantastic. So I don't need to get it again anyway.
Well, my comment is simply, he can say it all he wants, but eventually those other things are become more difficult or rare or out of print, and 5-10 years from now, whatever they're putting out is what's going to be out. It's a losing battle for him.
Yeah, but I can see the quality decreasing. Batman Year One on Slick, with the shiny paper, it wouldn't look the same.
That's his argument, is that it was... You know, it's been recolored before, but it was always recolored for non-gloss paper.
I suppose there's the possibility that if nobody buys it and there is a backlash, that they'll go back to the proper way. But ultimately, yeah, I mean, ultimately, whatever DC wants to put out and their property, and it'll be what they decide. So unfortunately, for good or for better or worse.
Well, don't let your copy go. Everyone already has a copy, though, do we?
Oh, hell yeah. It's my all-time favorite Batman story.
I got three.
And that's just in front of them.
So if you...
I can only see two from where I'm sitting.
If you're buying the Deluxe Edition, Chris can help out two other comic fans by getting them a better quality version.
Yeah, yet more of a Mazzucchelli-approved version. They need a stamp on the books for that.
DC Comics, speaking of, has launched a new version of their website.
Are you suggesting, like, the Nintendo Gold Seal, but the Mazzucchelli?
Yeah.
Batman Seal? Year One Seal?
Yep.
Dude, I'm so in.
And can you
bring it up to him in San Diego there? Because you'll be in San Diego, right? That was the big news? Big news of the week?
That's what I led with.
Yeah? That's what you led with. Noticed. Jeez. Anyways, next news item.
Well, see, now I want a sticker that goes on all the Before Watchmen books that says, Alan Moore not approved.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is this idea of, like, can you imagine if we tried to have Alan Moore approved stickers or not approved stickers? It would just be, like, every comic book produced, pretty much, except for one, would be not Alan Moore approved. He didn't even look at it or read it, but he just straight up didn't approve it.
All right. DC has launched their new website. They have eliminated the DC message boards to some, ironically, complaints. However, they removed the message boards because they seem to be full of nothing but complaints. So perfect way to end there. They've integrated their Facebook and Twitter and other social media presence into their current DC website. And along with this, Vertigo Comics has launched their own comic book reading app. And they're featuring the Complete Sandman, 99 cents an issue for the first month of the launch of the Vertigo app.
And the four other comic books on there I quite enjoyed as well.
It doesn't have
a lot of content yet.
It is quite new, and they launched it with Ferrest.
You've already jumped in there, Chris. You say, what about not just the concept of the books, but just the reader itself and the quality of that? How is that?
It's Comicology, man.
Yeah.
Yep. The thing says Comicology on it and everything.
Okay. So nothing new to add.
Mm-mm.
Thanks. Next news item.
We're hearing rumblings. We don't know what it is yet, but Marvel will soon announce something called Infinite Comics, which is a blend of comics and online content. So we'll keep you posted on this. There's some big stuff brewing at Marvel. They've got, you know, the changes with Hickman leaving the Fantastic Four franchise, with Bendis leaving Avengers. They're moving towards something. We just don't know what it is yet.
What is the speculation, though? I mean, sure, there's speculation.
It may be something that you buy a print copy, and then there is additional. Maybe there's an additional part of the story. Maybe there's some content that is extra pages that are only available online. It may work in tandem with an app. We don't know yet.
Interesting. This could be. When is this set to launch? Any word?
No, they'll be announcing it soon, but no word on the launch date. Likely, they seem to be building towards something big around September time, because that's about when Avengers X-Men finishes.
It's certainly...
They need to package it with the VHS tape movie of the actual event. You know, perfect.
Well, Valiant Comics has a variant cover for EXO that is the first ever talking comic book cover. What they're doing is the cover will have what's called a QR code, which is read by your smartphone. So you load up their... You use the QR code to take you to some page, and then you hold your phone over the comic book where EXO's mouth is, and then it will then speak through your phone to you and read dialogue, a passage of dialogue that will go with the cover.
That's awesome.
So they're back in the gimmick business already. The first day, first gimmick. Welcome back, Valiant.
That is... We have a run-in, and my We Talk Wrestling co-host, Addie, has joined the podcast out of nowhere. I guess you saw us on and just decided to come on and screw with us. Is that what happened?
Just you, Mo. Just you, Mo. You're talking. It's good. It means you've stopped eating.
That's a first, I mean.
That's true.
Actually, you know, have you considered doing, 24-hour wrestling podcast with Mo. That way he could slim down nicely.
But that would mean...
Oh, he's got other orifices he jams food in all the time.
You've seen that banana picture.
I was inspired by watching MacGuber.
Banana? Fried corn dog.
It's got mustard.
So anyways, We Talk Wrestling co-host Addie is apparently going to join us for the remainder of the weekly news with Cub Reporter K. Keith, keep going. Addie, a huge comic book fan of who's your favorite comic books? What's your favorite comic book series?
Speedball. The Masked Marvel. I'm telling you.
All 9 issues, right?
9 issues.
Nice. Damn right.
All right, Keith, go ahead.
We're seeing clips for the Ultimate Spider-Man animated series, and I thought I should let Mo know that this will feature Power Man and Iron Fist.
I'm there.
Is that in an octagon?
What?
The Ultimate Spider-Man.
Oh, the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
No?
Mo's not going to survive this event. If this is a crossover, then Mo is dying.
It is a crossover. It's a special We Talk Wrestling / Comics episode. All right, keep on going. So Ultimate Spider-Man, the series. Now you're saying they're going to be featured regularly?
I hate when these 25th issues add the stupid backup story that isn't by the original creators. They always got to jam in a guest appearance. Valiant... We have no idea yet. What was the answer? We just don't know.
We don't know. They better be in every episode.
They have released designs of several characters, including those two, though.
All right. What else?
Speaking of Valiant, they have announced what the first 4 titles will be for the Summer of Valiant. Exo Manowar launches in May, Harbinger in June, Bloodshot in July, and Archer and Armstrong in August.
Bringing out the big guns.
Do those come out to Cult of Personality?
That's a wrestling.
The Summer of what? Valiant?
That's a wrestling. Summer of Punk is a wrestling. Adam, you know a lot about wrestling, and you know very little about comics.
And we know very little about wrestling and a lot of.
And now I feel like a genius. I know a lot about both. Well, not really.
Full of. Well, yes. That's why this is a crossover. It's a crossover with the crossdresser.
I'm a little disappointed that they chose Bloodshot to go with.
Who would you have gone with?
We call that a
Rye?
We call that a no sell.
Rye was an interesting character, but Magnus, robot fighter.
Is that
they don't hold the rights right now?
Yeah, that's not technically their property, though, is it? That's Goldkeeper.
No, right now Dark Horse has the license for Magnus, Solar, and I believe Turok as well.
Yeah, because Turok would have been a...
Hell, Quantum and Woody would have been better than Bloodshot. I hated that book. And I hate Quantum and Woody, too.
Was Quantum and Woody creator-owned? Huh?
I think it was. I believe it's creator-owned.
That is I wonder about Ninjak.
No.
They would own Ninjak. And they would own Rye as well. And what else was there? Hardcore?
Turok.
Oh, wow.
Or just go. Turok would also be one of the gold key ones that they don't hold the license to, yeah.
How about Solar Man of the Autumn? I mean, Adam.
That would be the Autumn of Valiant, I would assume. That would be Solar Man of the Autumn.
Eternal Warrior would have made a great book.
No, I wouldn't have.
Ultimate Warrior would have made a great book.
The Ultimate Warrior's comic book was a great book.
It sucked, man.
I know. Oh, man. It sucked on a That's level to the point where it was great. Part. It's like the Ed Wood of comic books. It's so shitty. It's
the Plains. The Plains of Destrucity.
Was he able to write more than one issue of that thing?
I think it went like 4 issues, and then I believe the artist sued him after like 4 issues. So he wrote the fifth issue or something like that, or the 4th issue came out, and instead of having any words, it was like a 25 issue rant from the Ultimate Warrior, like a blog of him slamming the artist. Because he didn't do the work, but he still put out the issue. It's just awesome.
Was Hulk Hogan the artist?
No, Hulk Hogan was not the artist. No. No. It's too bad, because he and Ultimate Warrior, good pals.
Good friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, we're going to have Hulk Hogan on this week's We Talk Wrestling. Aren't we talking about his porn video?
We are. I'm talking about his sex tape.
Nice. All right, Keith, keep going. You know what it's like to be Robin Givens on Howard Stern? Trying to do the news. Keep going.
This gets paid slightly better than me. The initial orders on Avengers versus X-Men number one look like they are going to top 200,000 copies. This will make it the highest selling first print since the Barack Obama Amazing Spider-Man issue.
Wait a second. Barack Obama teamed up with Amazing Spider-Man and I missed that?
You did?
Was it with...
How did you miss that? That was everywhere, right?
I don't know. I missed it. But was it with the Ultimate Spider-Man?
15 years. No, it was Amazing Spider-Man.
Because the Ultimate Spider-Man is black now, right?
So is Barack Obama.
What?
This
I thought he was president.
I see the quality of chatter that keeps We Talk Wrestling.
Number one sports show. Number one sports show on Podomatic. Over 1,000 sports shows, that's number one.
You guys must do a lot of downloading.
Just a lot of comments. Anyways, Keith, that's good news. Sales, keep going. Wow.
You're the straw that stirs this drink, are you, Mo?
I am, and We Talk Wrestling as well. Keep going.
Okay, IDW is bringing back some creators that we haven't seen a lot of work from lately. Bernie Wrightson will be doing a book with Steve Niles. Frankenstein Alive, a sequel to Wrightson's 1983 adaptation of Frankenstein.
Sweet.
Nice.
And as well, John Byrne is doing a new superhero book called Trio.
Who cares?
So we'll see those in May. DC has shown the cover of their free comic book day comic. It will be a story about Pandora and the Justice League, giving a bit more information on who Pandora was, the mystery woman from the launch of the New 52. It will be Pandora's view of the old three universes and who she is watching in the New 52.
And this is why you have...
She's got a nice box.
What's that? Pandora? That's
nice... But she's got a nice box, yeah.
And we saw a bit of Pandora in the newest issue of Justice League, a backup story. It was Pandora and Phantom Stranger. Brett, did you have a chance to read that?
I did, actually, and I know this will come as a surprise to many, but I actually really enjoyed it. I thought the Phantom Stranger is great.
Did you know what the hell was going on?
I was fine with what was going on. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I basically picked up on what Pandora was, who she, like, I was interested in who she was, and I liked the fact that she is basically on a similar level as the Phantom Stranger, and the fact that she's planning on basically using the Justice League. I mean, I thought it was an interesting tie-in to the story, and I would actually look forward to reading.
You're actually going to, so that means you're going to be reading Justice League going forward.
I would attempt to read Justice League. I mean, if
you have the 3 minutes it will take every week to read that.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, but if it's as good as that backup story is, then I'll be fine with it.
Is this the first time you say this is the mystery woman that they mentioned, of course, in the first week of the New 52? She was in all 52 issues, is that correct, of the ones? In some sort of cameo, is that correct, Keith?
That's right. Her first appearance was Flashpoint number 5. And then she had a cameo, a one-panel cameo in all 52 number ones. And we haven't seen her since.
Okay, so this is the first time she talked. This is really...
Aside from Flashpoint number 5, yes.
And what occurred with Flashpoint number 5?
She explained the concept of the three universes, the Wildstorm, DC, and Vertigo universes that were being melded into the New 52 universe.
No mention of Static Shock then.
Milestone Universe? No, good point. Okay, so...
I believe Milestone had already been incorporated.
So the question is this finally going to give us a backstory of how this new universe came to be? Is that the point of this entire thing?
That seems to be what they're leading toward. Whether this is a crossover event, whether it is a storyline in Justice League, we're not sure yet. It is Geoff Johns that's writing the Free Comic Book Day comic. And Jim Lee will do the cover and at least a fold-out in that free comic. That's also a Pandora story that will start bridging into explaining her role in the New 52.
You going to make another Pandora's Box joke there, Addy?
Not yet.
No? Okay.
I'd like to take this opportunity to call bullshit. The editor-in-chief, when this whole 52 nonsense started, said, there ain't no going back. Yet we have this Pandora character planted. If 52 didn't work out, this is the point we would have been turning back straight into the DC continuity.
True, but they're not.
And that continuity is so important.
That's a Gorilla Monsoon reference. Oh, my God. I think it might be a good time to ask you to leave, Addy.
All right. Well, you guys have fun. Don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Like, have a good show? Jesus.
Let's jump from there into the 1 million moms controversy.
I'm not done talking about Pandora, quite frankly, because...
Okay, well,
I'm just trying to understand the character or what's known about the character more. Because I haven't been reading DC, and I'm not going to be reading this. But I am just curious about... She was possibly a tunnel back to the original continuity. Is that correct? Is that the entire point of this, but now she won't be? Is that what we're seeing?
No, I think she absolutely will be. I think that's her purpose.
So they're going to tunnel back to the original continuity regardless? Was that their plan all along?
I'm going to point out that is pure speculation on Chris's part.
It is.
I mean, keep in mind, when we hit the end of Crisis, Psycho Pirate remembered the old universe, too.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think that they're necessarily going to do it, but she is definitely one of the ways they could do it.
Okay.
No, my point was just that they came out and said, you know, we're stuck with this. We can't go back. We have no plans to go back, and this character is... Pretty well obvious now that this is the plan. If 52 had failed, this is the way they'd go back.
Well, the reality there, though, is that they're now writing stories since it was a success, so that can't be the direction of the character because they don't need to go back.
Oh,
so
I'm not saying they're doing it. I'm just saying this is the way they would. And it's fairly obvious that they... did plant this character for that exact reason, because, I mean, she does blame this entire 52 thing sort of on the Phantom Stranger in this backup story.
Sorry, vice versa. The Phantom Stranger says that it was her.
Right. Sorry.
Yeah, and there is an interesting line where he says something to the effect of, you think you're doing the right thing, which... I guess if you like the Phantom Stranger, which I do, implies that she's not doing the right thing.
Basically, that what she did was create this entire new universe, and that it is the right thing, or it isn't the right thing. I wasn't sure on that.
From the Phantom Stranger's point of view, it was a mistake. From her point of view, it was something that had to happen.
Okay, now the only thing that I say did intrigue me was she said, "If people knew who you really are, to the Phantom Stranger, you'd have more enemies than I do." That's the only thing I'm intrigued about. Now I want to know who the hell the Phantom Stranger really is.
And there's never been a real origin of the Phantom Stranger. Even way back in the day with Secret Origins, they did a Secret Origins of Phantom Stranger and told four completely unrelated versions of what could be his origin, one of which by Alan Moore. But never said that any of them was his real origin, just that these were ideas.
That's a great book.
Oh, it is. I actually took her line there to actually reference the Wandering Jew storyline in that book. That if people knew he was the Wandering Jew, the one who betrayed Jesus, that's
he is
who that's one of the stories in that Secret Origins issue.
Okay. Interesting. Now, one of the things was that she said that she already answers to a higher power than the Spectre. Who's higher power than the Spectre?
Great question. We don't know yet. There will be a whole new cosmology for this new DC universe. We haven't seen the Spectre so far.
we're just now seeing the Phantom Stranger, who was on my list of characters I really wanted to see again, reintroduced, so I was happy to see him. But we haven't seen a lot of the magic and kind of more cosmic characters so far.
Okay. Interesting. It is interesting. I see why you wanted us to read it, and I won't read it going forward, but personally I didn't think it was anything particularly interesting other than hey, they've planted some seeds for going back or for explaining this, but actual quality of the story didn't grab me personally, but it did for Brett, so I guess that's a win.
Did you like it, Keith?
I really liked it, particularly Phantom Stranger. I've been shelf reading Justice League, I'll admit it. Because it's 30 seconds, no one's gonna say, hey, this ain't a library in that length of time. So when I got to this backup story,
at the time I told Brett to do that, and he actually did that to somebody. That was awesome. Were you there?
I have also done it when I worked at the comic store.
Yeah, but the Brett, I said to Brett, I'm like, Brett.
You goddamn bastards kicking me out of the store.
I'm like, Brett, we came up with a plan. This guy had been there for like an hour reading through these comics, and Brett goes up to him, and he's like, hey, can I get you a coffee too or something like that? Something to sit down in? You know? Can I maybe serve you something? It's not a library, dickwad. It was great.
Let's point out they don't do that at the library.
No, actually they don't.
No one's ever gotten me a coffee at the library.
Library doesn't need to sell. They're government sponsored. Go ahead.
All right, and...
Oh, I guess, you know what, before you go ahead, I'm sorry to cut you off. Chris, did you like it?
Yeah, I actually really liked it. But I have to add a little caveat there. I've liked every appearance of the Phantom Stranger ever. And there's been some pretty bad ones. I cite every issue that co-starred Blue Devil.
I love Blue Devil.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, but it's not good comic books, man.
Well, it was for the first four issues. Anyways.
Didn't it run about 40, though?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, and the second version of Blue Devil? Forget it.
I love every version of Blue Devil. Anyways, that'd be my guilty pleasure. Keith, go on.
All right. Now, the story that I tried to start three times, but we need to refocus. 1 Million Moms, which is part of I'm just going to call them a hate organization,
yep,
called the American Family Association, called for a boycott of Toys R Us over the Life with Archie number 16, which features a same-sex marriage. Riverdale, and whatever state Riverdale is in, does have same-sex marriage. And one of their lead characters, who was introduced a few years ago, gets married in this issue. And Toys R Us said no. They released a press release that they had no intention of changing for an organization such as this or for anyone else to tell them what products they should and should not carry. And subsequent to this, quite a groundswell happened on social media, and Toys R Us and everywhere else sold out of Life with Archie number 16. A nice little thank you card should go to 1 Million Moms for making sure that everyone heard about this book and knew exactly where to buy it.
Okay. Can we get into this as a real topic here? I actually really want to discuss this one. Is everybody comfortable with that?
Yeah, let me just say, and that's the news, and we'll move into this as a topic.
All right. Excellent. Now, anybody else guessing that 1 Million Moms is probably closer to 3 Moms?
I was going to say, I want a head count.
Yeah.
Their Facebook has 40,000, so it's an approximation.
That's significantly less than 1 million.
It's an approximation, I suppose. A million-ish moms didn't have quite the ring. A number less than or equal to 1 million.
Tell you the truth, 40,000 moms, to me, would have sounded impressive enough, but, I mean, whatever. I do want to discuss this, because now all of us have read... or read some of this, or read all of this issue, I believe, right? We've all had a peek at this, correct?
Yeah, I kind of gave it a flip through, yeah.
First off, I mean, I hadn't read an Archie book for an awful long time, and I was very impressed with the storytelling in this. The first thing, I'm not sure if this is the way they've been doing their books for a while, but this isn't Archie that I'm used to, which is just a quick, you know, 8-page, 6-page story and a bunch of gags. This is a true continuity, events, evolution of characters, subplots, really good writing. So, I mean, first off, that caught me off guard, and I want to commend them for that. I appreciated that. Anybody else have any thoughts on the actual quality of the book?
Yeah, no, I have to agree with you. I was a little surprised they were able to put out a large issue that had a story and really move things along. It wasn't like the Archie of just reprints from the 50s. Really quite good. I enjoyed it.
One of the other things that get me about this is this was issue, what is this? What issue was this? Number 4 or 16?
16.
Is it number 4 in a current storyline or something, though? I thought I saw this.
Part 4 of this arc.
Part 4 of this arc. Okay, that's where it was. And yet, I stepped into this, and I found this much easier to understand and follow along and get with, even though they've changed a lot of these characters, than anything in many of the number 1 issues that we'll be reviewing later on this week. And almost all of them. So I think that's also something that's really, really good about this book. So, I hope that this will continue the sales. Now, but let's talk about the concept. I personally, and I don't even want to get into so much the politics here. I'll say that the politics that are shown in this Archie book are certainly more along my personal viewpoints. But I kind of want to get into the idea of whether or not it's correct for these books to have certainly – I don't think you can deny that there's a certain level of propaganda to what they're presenting, right? And so is that right or is that wrong? Because some people aren't comfortable with it. Should Archie be simply about enjoying the little stories and little books, or should it be about presenting a viewpoint that is and it could be the other viewpoint, because they used to do the Spire comics, Christian Archie comics, which would have presented a vastly different conservative viewpoint, which also I found offensive. And I'm not saying I necessarily found the concept offensive. I'm just wondering if the concept of whether or not Archie books should contain content of this level at all. Where does everybody kind of fall in on that?
Well, I certainly agree with you that it is difficult because I agree with the point of view, and on something that would be, you know, an extreme right-wing view, you know, being a card-carrying Canadian, our extreme right wing is pretty centrist as far, compared to an American. So, you know, it is tough when it doesn't seem that extreme because it's within my belief system already.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that, though, to put any kind of fence around it like that is the same kind of fence that someone would expand to say all comics should do that. This is a comic that's aimed... It isn't, you know, the dime store Archie. They still sell the digests. Those aren't this. Life with Archie is the book that Archie has been married. It is the grown-up Archie comic.
And yet it's available at a Toys R Us, though. Where certainly a parent who would disagree with these points of view, and I'm not here to judge whether or not, I mean, I like I say, these are moral on my belief system as well, but I'm not to judge if somebody else's belief system is different, is wrong. I'm just going to say that so that perhaps somebody has that different belief system and not knowing it, thinking it's just an Archie, wouldn't understand what they're getting their children. So should it, you know, does that mean that it's correct to do? Just because you're saying it's, regardless, this is getting into the hands of, I'm certain some children whose parents aren't comfortable with this, probably this got in their hands. I mean, it's very unlikely it didn't.
And is that a bad thing?
Well, it's not a bad thing because it's your point of view though, Brett, right? And the point...
Yes, but the fact of the matter is that their point of view is wrong.
Brett's willing to go further than you are. And I was once at a play about bullying, and a parent was quite upset after the show and said, but now I'm going to have to talk to my child about this topic. And it was probably the most ludicrous reaction I've ever heard.
Okay, but the same thing, right? I mean... my parents were not Christians. I accidentally read a Christian comic, a Christian Archie comic, and when they picked it up, they were offended by it. And it, just because you think that they're wrong, it's the same idea. It's the same idea. It's forcing. It's the issue to me isn't whether or not there's a right or wrong here, because, like I say, I have a certain belief system, and they're not offending that. The issue to me is are they in at all presenting your point of view? For a character like Archie, is it right or is it wrong? Should this ever even exist in the Archie universe? I mean, it's one thing for it to exist, I think, in if you're going to do an independent book or if you're going to be an Image, or even if Marvel's going to create an independent character, I think that's different. I mean, if Marvel was to make Spider-Man all of a sudden a homosexual, and I think that would also be, I think that would possibly, I could see why that would upset some people. I mean,
Marvel already has an openly homosexual character.
Yeah, they do, but you know what? Nobody gives a damn about that character. He's not a big character, Brett. A member of Alpha,
but now
nobody gives a crap.
Technically, now there's Kevin Keller.
Yes, he is. It's a different thing.
No, he's not.
It's a different thing.
He's not a big character.
It is a different.
He's a character that they brought up, you know, for this reason. And you know what? I mean, my hat's off to Archie Comics for taking a chance and for showing a different viewpoint. Now, the fact of the matter is that most of these Archie comics are alternate universe type comics anyway.
Yeah, this is like an Elseworlds type thing.
Tell a story. Yeah, where they tell a story, and then, but then in the real world, real Archie world, none of it ever happens.
Okay, but Brett, so, doesn't matter though. I mean, it's not about whether or not it's not really part of the continuity, because nothing's really part of any Archie Comics continuity. He's been a teenager for 2,000 years, you know, and all respect Dick Clark. That's America's oldest teenager, you know? That's not the issue, Brett. That it's it is or isn't within continuity. Like I say, or the issue that there is, I can't even think of it as a member of Alpha Flight. What's the member of the openly gay character's name? Kevin Keller.
North Star.
Thank you. North Star. Okay. North Star's, say Kevin Keller's not a major character, but he certainly gets a much higher, spotlight within the Archie universe than North Star gets within the Marvel universe. Will you agree with that?
Well, I mean, I've read North Star, like, you know, in 3 or 4 different series, including some major series. So,
like,
I mean, like Wolverine.
Okay.
You know, he's
currently in Avengers.
He's in the X-Men. You know,
currently
Avengers.
In Avenger, yeah.
It's currently in Avengers.
He's appearing in a book right now. Yeah. I don't remember which one it is. He is appearing in a book.
Okay,
right
so,
now.
But is this now? See, I haven't read this. So tell me now, is he simply a gay character? Or is he a gay character where they might be pushing boundaries that some people are not comfortable with? And what I mean by that is, for instance, it's one thing, like I believe Don't Ask, Don't Tell personally to be ridiculous. And yet there is a debate about it. And Marvel and Archie Comics here has the character not only be a gay character, not only getting married, but he's an openly gay character getting married who is a war hero. It's really, really, really pushing a propaganda viewpoint, whether or not you agree with the viewpoint. Like I say, I do. The point to me isn't whether or not you agree with it. The point to me is whether or not it's correct for them to do it. It's pushing it more than, it's not just having a gay character. It's saying, here's all the great things that a gay character does. Now, I'm not going to disagree with the fact that they should do it so much personally. I just want to start the debate about whether or not Archie Comics is the right place for it.
If they didn't do it now, in 10 years, they'd be in trouble.
Why is that?
Because Archie makes its money on reprints, not on their current issue. If Archie failed to be relevant, and it hasn't been relevant for a long time, I think they're dead in the future. I think they're being very smart and handling this with a great deal of skill. I'm actually excited about Archie. Between this and Archie Mate's Kiss, I bought 2 Archie books this month. What the hell is up with that?
This is certainly a hell of a lot better than Archie Mate's
Kiss. I haven't bought an Archie book in 15 years.
This is a lot better than Archie Mate's Kiss. So you all do think that it's okay for...
I'm just saying I bought it, but...
I would say, Mo, that everything you're saying about Archie is a microcosm of everything I've heard for 25 years about comics in general.
And how would
that,
what do you mean?
Comics is not a medium where you should be talking about issues like this. This is exactly what we heard when North Star came out in Alpha Flight. This I was told by my father when I talked to him about that issue. That's not something that should be in a comic book because comic books are for kids. So that topic should not be expressed. And what you're saying is a microcosm of the bigger discussion that comic books as a medium shouldn't be talking about these things. You're saying that Archie Comics, as a medium, because they are a medium, Archie Comics is a very specific
I'm not saying
design
it, Keith,
book.
Just to be,
it is a formulaic.
Just to be clear, I'm not saying it as I'm trying to start the discussion about it. This is not my point of view. so much as like I say, I want the discussion to be had from both sides and to be understood.
Keith, what you just said, powerful, man. I have to totally agree. I didn't see it that way, but yes, you're absolutely right. It is a microcosm. And, wow, way to bring me up to date.
Okay, so how about this? What is the target fan base for, say, the latest Alpha Flight series? And what is the target fan base for an average Archie comic that may contain these viewpoints? And it's not about containing the characters. There's nothing wrong with the gay character. It's about the viewpoints.
Well, at least in 2010, Archie was the highest printed comic book. We don't see it in the numbers we see because it doesn't do those numbers through Diamond, through comic stores. It's one of the only things that is still on newsstands. The Archie Digest that Chris is talking about, which are primarily reprint books, are the highest selling thing, at least as of 2010, for the comic books medium. There are kids reading these, but there are people that don't think of themselves as comic book readers reading these.
Okay.
There are people that grab it for something to read on the plane. Life with Archie is isolated. It is one book. Most of them, as Brett said, are still telling the soda shop story where Jughead eats too many burgers. That's what's going on in most of the books. Life with Archie is the, for want of a better word, the ongoing Elseworlds book of the Archie universe.
Okay, and like I say, now if it was though, can you sit here and say to me if they instead Archie had come out and had the different point of view from the Christian books that you disagree with and was doing the exact same thing, that you would say it was okay? Because you'd have to be able to. You can't have it one way.
I actually was a little surprised that they went this direction with Archie. The conservative angle would be more in keeping with what they've done in historically.
Not really. If you look back in the 70s when there was the time of the hippies, there was indications the Archie comics were had things like them dressing as hippies. They had things of them protesting war. Had things of that nature as well. So you can't say that.
But I think the truth of the matter
rallies
is
and that type
what
of thing?
Keith is saying. Yeah, I mean that absolutely did happen. But I think what Keith is saying is the general thought process of most people.
The public perception
is of Archie. Yeah, the public perception is absolutely that Archie is pro small town, pro marriage, pro conservatism. But you know, when I look at this, it really all comes down to the concept that if Archie comes out the other way, the conservative way, well then there isn't somebody, like I don't think there's the million opposite moms who
there
are pro-gay
yeah,
marriage doing that. No, I don't believe that. I think that
I do
the conservative
that, yeah.
ones who are more likely to come out and say that this, there's something wrong here.
I would disagree with that, Brett. I would say the difference is, and I'll say this, I would think both sides, if it came out like conservative side saying that this should not happen, I do think there would be the backlash as well. But I don't think that, I do think people would talk about it. I do think there would be the opposite side. But I think the difference is the opposite side wouldn't take the bullying tactics of a million moms took. I think they would talk about it. I think they would say it's disgusting and it's repugnant and they disagree with it. But I don't think they would take the bullying tactics that this group took. And I think that, but not to say that it wouldn't occur at all. I think that's wrong.
Well, I can think we can look at Holy Terror and see how the other side did react to very, very strong conservative views. Yes, there were a lot of posts. There were a lot of complaints. I don't remember the word boycott ever being said.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is that in this day and age of the internet, you're never going to escape somebody criticizing the book. I mean, so absolutely. You know, when I say that, I generally just mean that I don't think that there would be a completely organized group against
the strong arm, the bullying part. Tactics probably wouldn't exist. That side doesn't tend to do that. I agree with that. So like I say, though, I mean, let's get back.
But there would definitely be people commenting.
Okay, but let's get back, though, then. If somebody came out with let's say, okay, Archie Comics is this. Now let's say somebody who was writing, even though it's in the same universe, let's say somebody was to take Josie and the Pussycats and came out with the exact opposite point of view now next week, so you'd have no problem with it. Even though it was definitely, if Josie and the Pussycats was to push conservative propaganda against homosexuality and marriage, you'd have no problem with it because it's the same thing. It's the same idea that it's okay to do it for these books.
I also don't know if we'd hear about it. I did say in the story, the only reason that we all heard about this comic coming out, it got a bit of media, but it didn't really go to media until this boycott was started to be pushed. I heard about the comic because people were complaining about it, not because it existed.
Well, you heard about Holy Carrot.
Nobody complains about Pepper and Patty.
I want that on a t-shirt now.
Nobody complains about Peppermint Patty. I want that to be the official We Talk Comics t-shirt.
It is a tough question, Mo, and I think that Brett and I both said that at the top, that it is hard to pick a side when the controversial thing that we're talking about agrees with us. But, we went through this with Holy Terror. And, I hated the book. I despised it. Maybe it made me rethink everything I own by Frank Miller, that, maybe I should give it a second read and maybe throw a whole bunch of it in the pile. But it's not that I never said that he shouldn't be allowed to tell that story or that there should be a boycott of the story. I was certainly clear that I don't agree with his worldview, and I don't agree with what he's presented in the story.
You were certainly clear that after you had purchased it, you wish you could burn it.
Well, if I purchased it, I could burn it all I want.
Absolutely.
It's my own property.
Yeah, and it sucked. It did suck.
I only get in trouble.
At least this is good. I do agree with the points of view personally that they're saying, but I do find it to be a little bit of a strong-arm tactics in the way it's presented. I think it's a little bit, it could use a little more subtly, but I'd agree. I think I'm going to parrot here as my final thought on this personally. I'm going to parrot Chris's point of view, and I think he said this extremely well when he said that this was brave of them and they should be commended for it, because it would have been very easy for them not to do this and very easy for them not to take this stand. And somebody needs to. I will say that. Like I say, the question for me is whether or not it should be Archie. And I do think there's a difference between some of the different books we've talked about. But I agree with Chris. I think you said that very well, Chris, that somebody needed to. And it's very brave of them, and they should be commended for that.
I'm proud of the entire medium, actually, that this exists. Our most conservative area of comic books is having the balls to actually address this issue. I'm proud.
I will just say that every month DC puts out 51 books that don't do it. It is the most easy thing in the world to not address these issues. Marvel puts out 90 books and 88 of them don't address this. It's the easiest thing in the world.
I'm just going to say that in the case of Archie, I mean, because it is a different form of comics in this case, I almost liken it to TV. It's one of those cases where a TV show can come out and speak out on an issue, and it becomes a big deal, and they win awards. Archie comes out and it gets boycotted,
or actually sells out.
Or sells
out. I give a little pinky clap to people for that as well.
Yeah, which is absolutely awesome. But, one of the other things that I wanted to touch on is that I know on Twitter today our friend of the show, Alpha Comics, was certainly speculating that with the Astonishing X-Men 50-51, that North Star would be getting married.
Interesting. Okay, like I say, for me if it's presented as part of a natural storyline, I think that's or like I say, presentation of the character, to me, there's a distinction between a storyline and perceived propaganda, whether you agree with the propaganda or not, and whether or not, to me, like I say, That was the discussion I wanted to have, and I really appreciate you guys for indulging me on that. I think that was really interesting, and I really appreciated your points of view. Let's move on to our next little bit here, and as that last discussion was infinitely better than the run-in by Adam, though I have to admit he does make me laugh. But, geez. Anyways.
It was a little more focused.
What's that? It was a little more focused.
It was a little more focused.
It makes me laugh, but geez. anyway, so let's move on.
Run in, really? Can we have anything that doesn't have a wrestling reference tonight?
Well, I think this last discussion never had. Actually, you know what? We did have a thorough discussion about the presentation of gay characters in a serious discussion on We Talk Wrestling quite a long time ago, and it was also fascinating. So, Brett, go ahead. You have a comment?
Nope. I just said that was one. One serious discussion.
Oh, we've had more than one serious discussion, but we do it with profanity and beer. anyways, let's move on here to our regular weekly or one of our regular semi-regular segments because it's the 25th Supersize Spectacular episode of We Talk Comics. We thought it was absolutely time to do Four for a Dollar. Chris, why don't you tell everybody kind of the concept behind Four for a Dollar and kick it off?
Sure. Four for a Dollar is basically issues you will find in 25-cent bin in just about any comic book store. Sure, the 25-cent bin isn't 25 cents anymore, but that's what we call it. We just pick some of our favorites from the past that are easily found and cheap. Just good comic book reads. My pick this week is Operation Galactic Storm. This is a crossover that happened in the 80s, consisting of all the Avengers titles and the Cosmic titles at the time. Yeah, I just like Captain America in space.
Wasn't it more like wasn't it more like 1991, 1990, and that like,
I thought it was 89, but unfortunately,
look. Wasn't the original Iraq War like 1991, 90, and this was a takeoff on that? Am I wrong on this? I don't think it was in the 80s. I think it was early 90s.
You know what? I am probably wrong. It probably early 90s. But remember, I don't actually consider the 80s to stopping till 83. Until Martin Crew was not available on the radio, 80s did not stop for me.
Okay.
Yeah, the 80s are 83 to 93 for us. Yeah.
That's probably true.
Oh, man.
The 80s stopped when Nirvana showed
up. Like, oh, God, Operation Galactic Storm. That's one of those ultra low points in my memory of the Avengers.
Quasar, one of the most unused characters of the Marvel Universe, playing a major role in a crossover. You had some awesome stuff happening. You have Hawkeye actually being relevant in an Avengers story. He's never relevant.
Except for the Ultimate Universe.
Nobody knew what was going on. I mean, I don't think there's a single person that you could ask who would ever be able to tell you, so what happened in Operation Galactic Storm? And nobody would be able to tell you.
But actually, that's kind of what I like about Operation Galactic Storm, is you have to get all the crossovers. At the time, that's a piss-off. Now that they're 50 to 75 cents in bins, and you can get them all,
or 25 cents just to keep the illusion up. You know what, Chris? I wasn't going to jump, and Brett's kind of jumped in, and I know Keith has his point of view. I can see them laughing when you started talking about this. I wasn't going to disagree with you, but I'll just say this. I started to try and read this probably 2-3 years ago and just got like 3 issues in and gave up.
I mean, I love the fact that you love it because, you know, I mean, that's one of the great things about comics, that you can take this absolutely horrific comic that the vast majority of people dislike immensely, and you can come out and say, buy it. I like it. And I like that fact. But, you know, no, I don't like it. But I think it's hilarious that you do.
All right.
I think it's fantastic.
I actually have a question. It while I was reading it in preparation for this podcast, it reminded me of a JLA story that I can't remember at all, where the entire DC universe, with the exception of Batman, goes into space to confront some galactic threat, and Superman enlists Deathstroke the Terminator. Can anyone remember the storyline?
Panic in the Sky?
I don't think so, because Panic in the Sky was just in the Superman books. And that was Brainiac invading, essentially, Earth, so...
Yeah,
it could have been Panic in the Sky. I don't actually remember it being a JLA title. I just remember it had every character in the DC universe, with the exception of Batman.
Well, I'll give you my trade paperback of that next time you come into town, dude.
Well, you know what? I think? I think that's a question for Twitter. If anybody knows that one, then they better tweet that Chris_WeTalk guy.
Chris_WeTalk.
Yes, that would be very nice.
Seriously, I'm hoping somebody knows.
I'd appreciate that.
So hoping somebody knows, because I'm too lazy to look it up.
Jamal, I'm counting on you. You've come through for me before.
You had a comment you wanted to make there, Keith? You looked like you wanted to weigh in.
March to May of 1992 is the answer. 19 parts.
Okay.
19 parts, including Avengers West Coast, Captain America, Iron Man, Quasar, Thor, and Wonder Man.
See, again, this is another perfect example of a crossover that's only 19 parts, but felt like 300.
I love that you said only 19 parts.
Kind of like Maximum Carnage, which I thought was 70,000 parts.
Yeah.
Well, I also liked it because there was no core book.
I mean, nowadays, in the day and age of the crossover, I mean, you know, 19 parts is the miniseries for it.
There was an arcade game based on it as well. The things Wikipedia teaches you.
Well, there was also an arcade game for Maximum Carnage. I mean,
well, that was a SNES game, and the game was awesome. Keith, you're laughing like a monkey over there, so here's your turn. That's your punishment.
Well, I'm going to go to with a book that... You may be able to find it in a $4 for $1 bin. Maybe you'll find it $4 for $5. But I just reread it a couple of days ago, and I loved it. Captain America, Sentinel of Liberty. It is a Kevin Maguire art and written by, I believe it's Nicesia that wrote it.
Oh, is it the Prestige format one?
Yep,
that's the one.
The Prestige format retelling.
Yeah, it's totally Nicesia.
That has the might have the greatest prolonged fight scene in the history of comic books between him and Red Skull.
It has some really good fights in it, and what it was is it was for the anniversary of the creation of Captain America, 50th
awesome.
Anniversary.
It was Nicesia.
And, so, yeah, the mid-1990s, 50th anniversary of the creation of Captain America. And it was to be a complete origin story of Captain America from, you know, the classic, what we just saw in First Avenger last year in the film. In fact, it actually put me to mind that they seem to have gone to this as a source when they were working on First Avenger, because there are a lot of little notes that are included. Things like the explanation of why he had the original shield, and then why he got a round one, which, you know, purely so that he could throw it. The introduction of some characters that are really meant for the World War II era. A bit more of a, you know, in the 90s they wanted to explain, you know, kid sidekicks a little differently. So his reasons for having Bucky as a sidekick are updated. Even though they take place in the 1940s, they're updated for the sensibilities of the 1990s. I just really love this book. Art is so nice on it. And I think it's one of those forgotten books because, you know, of course, the origins are told 10 times soon.
You know, and I got to say, I don't think you can find this $4 for $1 or even $4 for $3. I'm not sure how much it would be. But this one kind of holds a special place for me, too, because when I was 13, kind of about the age of 13, I fell out of reading comics for a couple of years, and then Brett was my friend. And when I was, you know, 15 when we were 15. We were hanging out in high school all the time. When I was about 16, though, was when I got back into comics, 16, 17. And Brett had given me a bunch of books. And there was reading them, and nothing really was catching me until I read that. That was one of the books that Brett gave me. And that was the book that basically got me back into comic books. That's an awesome, awesome read.
Yeah, that's one of the last times that I actually liked Fabian as a writer, too.
You're too hard on him, dude.
As I remember, that particular issue is where I developed the fascination with Hydra and the reason I don't hate Bucky. And if I remember correctly, I believe I got that particular, the number one issue, in a grab bag with the collector's item issue of 18 number one, which I still have bagged somewhere waiting for that one to be worth a mint.
You know, if the movie didn't do it, I don't know if anything will. Maybe you can get Mr. T to sign it.
You know, it'll probably be worth a mint, like literally just a mint. Somebody will have to hand you a mint.
Hey, like
it,
a junior mint, I would eat. I would not trade you a junior mint for that book, actually, to be honest with you. There's no way.
I would trade you.
I'd give up a single.
Junior mint.
No, I would not give up.
I'll give you three junior mints for that.
Are you kidding me? I'll make that trade in a
I'm
second.
I'm going to say a junior mint and three after eight. Raising the stakes.
This has nothing to do with anything, but I actually remember the third issue in that grab bag, and it was the G.I. Joe number 5, the one where they teamed up with October Guard.
Yep.
Okay. This
I remember the cover.
This also has nothing to do with that book, but Brett, junior mints or junior caramels?
Junior mints.
Chris?
Dude, as long as milk duds exist, junior mint.
Keith?
Caramel.
Absolutely, caramel is the correct answer. Keith wins.
This has become the McLaughlin Report version.
the answer was caramel. All right, I'm going to do my four for a buck, and this is a series from the late 90s I loved. Rags Morales. This is I had seen his work over in Valiant first, but this was the DC book where I really, really discovered him. I love Snapper Carr as a character as well. This is – and Tom Pyre, I believe, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. P-E-Y-E-R. Brett, name person?
Pear?
Tom Pear wrote this book. And this is the Hour Man. Now, this is the Hour Man from the DC 1 Million. He got his own book in the late 90s. And like I say, Snapper Carr. And so now he came back. And it's a typical story. It's an android trying to become human story that we've seen so many times. But with Snapper Carr there, it's funny as hell. Rags' art is spectacular. The characterization and the humanization of this android character is better than most human beings in any other medium. The story had so many subplots. It moved fast. It went exactly 25 issues. Pick up any one of them. Every single one of them is a mint. Brett, your thoughts?
Or a caramel.
It's a caramel because it's that damn good.
Now, you know, actually, I think that's probably one of those books that I read because of you. In that regard. And yeah, I totally enjoyed that series. I thought that it had really nice pacing. It was a fun character. I just thought it was a nice book.
You can't not love Snapper.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, Snapper worked in that case. So, absolutely. Thumbs up.
So, Prez, your turn.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to respond to that. It took me a minute to think about it. I've read this more recently. The first 5 issues, I would totally agree with you. Great read. But as soon as it became clear that this new android, Iron Man was not going to work, I found the last 20 issues of that series entertaining, but really, I felt that it was on its death thralls for the entire rest of that. They were just waiting to be canceled the whole series.
I disagree with this. I mean, it was obvious that the sales were disappointing, and yet it lasted 25 issues. Why? Because they knew they had a book of real quality, and they did what they could to try and get readers back to it. they did what they could to try and create guest appearances or story arcs or involve him in other things and involve him in Justice League and things like that in order to get some actual, you know, readers and eyes to the story arc. You see DC will get rid of books after 5 issues if it's not working. They really gave this a try because they knew they had something. Also, and certainly Rags Morales has gone on to have a very stellar career since then. And, you know, the thing is, this is one of those books that you talk about the fact that you thought that they were waiting to be canceled. Well, I mean, they were putting in so many subplots in every single, further in them on every time they go. Like, for instance, who was the creator of this android and could he be the original Iron Man in the future and all this different stuff that was flowing together. I kind of disagree with you.
I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it. I'm just saying after issue 5, it smacks of desperation and it's palpable.
Okay. Well, you also don't like Quantum and Woody, so what the hell do you know? Brett, your turn.
Quantum and Woody sucks.
Well, you haven't read it all. Go, Brett. In fact, you haven't read it in 15 years. Go, Brett.
All right. I am plucking one that's actually relatively recent. I don't know that you'd find it in a quarter bin per se, but I don't know that you'd find it maybe ever. But I'm sure that it wouldn't be worth a lot of money. It's Trace Adkins is Luke McBain. This is a mini series that came out from 12 Gauge Comics in 2009. Now, the reason that I picked this up was kind of odd because as I was watching Celebrity Apprentice this one season, I found that I really enjoyed Trace Adkins as a person on that show. And so I happened to see the book kicking around and I was just like, oh, hey, why not? I'll give that a shot. You know, it was relatively cheap. And so then I started reading it and I'm like, it's a story about he's a guy who's a convict coming back and his brother is kind of taking over the town. I mean, it's almost like an A-team story in that regard. But I enjoyed the way it was told, and I just thought, this is a good, fun read for what I was looking for. Better than I expected, so, you know, it's my choice as for
who's the publisher, Brett?
12 Gauge Comics.
12 Gauge Comics. Oh, okay. All right. I have nothing to say to that, because I didn't know it existed, but it sounds like something I'd read.
Nobody's going to know that it existed, Doesn't
that go more in our lost books category than four for a dollar? I mean, really, aren't you kind of genre hopping here a little?
I don't know, because it finished. I mean, it has a start and an end. I mean, it's not really lost in that regard.
I think you're pushing it a little bit. That's all right, Brett. You know what? Why don't you start off and kick off our We View section with our weekly reviews?
We're going to pass this. We're not going to mock Brett at all for watching Celebrity at Brenda. Nobody else wants to comment on you watch.
I will say that...
They've had rustlers on and I haven't watched. Of course, they had rustlers on. That's why I didn't watch.
So I will say that the quality of the celebrities of Celebrity Apprentice, I have no idea who you're talking about. I have absolutely no idea who Trey is.
Oh, God, I'm glad I'm not the only one. I wasn't going to admit that.
Isn't he a country singer?
He's a country singer, yep.
There you go. Is he big?
Yeah, he's huge.
Okay.
Well, I mean, in country, and he's also a large man. Oh. But
isn't he the one who's married to... No, that's not him.
No, it's not.
No, you're not thinking of the right person.
No, I'm not. I was thinking...
I don't know who you're thinking of, and I don't know who you're
thinking of. I was thinking of Jewel, and then I realized that's an actual cowboy. That's not a singer. That's... Yeah. Anyways...
Jewel be a female singer and not country.
Yeah, no, but she's married to she's married to a cowboy, but he's not a cowboy singer. He's an actual like bull rider. Anyways, and I think they were on Celebrity Apprentice.
I don't think Jewel is actually married, but
yeah, she is.
Okay.
She's married to a bull rider, but okay, doesn't matter. Even though that's a fact.
We Talk People magazine is apparently what we agree with.
No, that's a fact. Let's just move on. Brett, We Views.
Well, I'm going to start out with Age of Apocalypse. again, I am a generally noted X-Men hater right now. And now, although I was a huge fan of the original Age of Apocalypse story, but I haven't kept up with the happenings of the Age of Apocalypse universe throughout this time. So for me to kind of jump in was a little odd. But one thing that I will say is that I was actually kind of interested in the storyline. Although I did find the art, I found the art odd because I liked it, but at the same time I found that the characters were really hard to follow because I found the faces weren't drawn terribly well. They were just kind of, they all seemed kind of squinched to me, so I did have trouble following in that regard. But at the end of the book, I actually liked it. And I was as surprised as anybody to like this book, but this is one of those cases where I'm like, yeah, I could conceive of reading this. So I liked it.
Okay. Chris, your thoughts on the book.
Age of Apocalypse. I actually love the art, but I can easily see how it made things harder to follow. I would not recommend it as a jumping on point. Personally, I don't like the Age of Apocalypse, and I know I'm in the minority on that one. The book failed for me, unfortunately.
Keith, what do you think?
I do wish that I had read the Uncanny X-Force .1 issue from a couple weeks ago, which led into this. I don't know how vital it was. I guess I'll have to go back now and see if it fills in some of the gaps. I'm cautiously optimistic. I am a big fan of the Age of Apocalypse. I keep going back and forth whether I want to buy the trade paperbacks or the omnibus that just came out for my rereading this summer. But it was a bit hard to follow, and I felt like I had missed a few chapters of the story, and they weren't catching me up. That would be my big critique of it, is that I didn't really know where they were. You know, they talked about, you know, where Wolverine's at, what his deal is, but I feel like I missed a chapter.
Okay.
So if I can figure out what that was and backtrack, whether it was that 6-issue miniseries that came out a couple of years ago, maybe see Uncanny X-Force.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you how much Brett said he hadn't kept up on the Age of Apocalypse. How much Age of Apocalypse has come out since the original early 90s debut of the Age of Apocalypse concept?
Not a huge amount. There were a couple of issues of Exiles. There were there was a 6-issue mini a couple of years ago, which I think is the big bridge.
Okay.
Most of the other things that have come out are actually fill-ins of earlier stories that took place before the Age of Apocalypse.
And when's the last time you actually read Age of Apocalypse?
It'd be at least 10 years.
How about you, Brett?
Yeah, at least 10 years.
See, I mean, it's at least 10 years for me as well, and of course I haven't read any of that other stuff. I was so confused. I couldn't remember who the characters were or what was going on. I couldn't. So many characters I've thrown at you. I mean, again, it's an issue number one. Issue number one should be easily accessible and still satisfy hardcore readers. That should be the goal. This book, to me, it's like if you haven't read any Age of Apocalypse, you're screwed. If you haven't read any recently, you're not quite as screwed, but you're still screwed. And but to say nothing of the ultimate fail of, what if you've never read an X-Men book? I mean, they're really presuming not only do you have some familiarity with Age of Apocalypse, you have some familiarity with X-Men. And they shouldn't presume that. Every issue is somebody's first issue. That's where, to me, where the fail of this was. I just found this really confusing, and the art style didn't help. Let's move on to the Manhattan Project. Is that what it was called? Am I getting the right name?
Project.
Pardon me?
It's plural. Project.
Ah, the Manhattan Projects. Well, I never said I was smart. I said I was just going to talk like I thought I was. And this is a book that, to me, it's a really good book. But to me, I think it's going to be a really good series. But it wasn't a really good number one. You know what I mean? I could definitely tell the quality of the writing, the quality of the art, and I think it's going to be interesting. But as a setup issue, for me, it didn't work all that well. I mean, I felt like not much happened, and it didn't do much to bring me back. And unfortunately, as good as I think it probably will be as it gets rolling, There's so many books out there for it to compete with that I don't see myself coming back to it. Keith, what are your thoughts?
I keep hearing how awesome Jonathan Hickman is, and I tried Fantastic Four, and I just didn't dig it. This I really liked. I really enjoyed this book. It reminded me of older Warren Ellis stuff, where he just creates a whole universe, and he can do whatever the hell he feels like because he has total control, and there's no rules. And he can just introduce all kinds of weird things into that universe. You know, the bit with a certain super genius of the real world who's looks like he's been put in a timeout. We're not sure what's
happening. What the hell was that?
It's just throwing things at you. It did really remind me of, 1990s Warren Ellis stuff, which, some of my favorite comics, period. I was a little surprised. I read a pile of Fantastic Fours, and I didn't see what all the fuss was about. This I really enjoyed.
You really enjoyed it. Okay. Chris, what do you think?
I'm actually going to pipe in here because I have written down here in my review. I was going to actually mention it reminded me of Warren Ellis. We are so on the same wavelength. I love this book. There was nothing about this book I did not enjoy.
Brett, your thoughts?
The end.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to join in with more of the same, really. I've liked Jonathan Hickman for a while, and I completely agree that Jonathan Hickman on his own, I mean, he seems like a really smart person in that regard, and I think that what he's done is he's taking a lot of smart concepts and putting them in a book and just putting them in a blender, really, and diving through. So it's got tasty art, it's got great writing, it's a hell of a story. I mean, I would absolutely be on this with a bullet.
Excellent. So let's keep the sneak format going here. Brett, your turn.
All right. Let's see. I'm going to talk then about Superbia. Superbia by Boom. And this is another one of those kind of superhero team storybooks that where you kind of get a chance to see almost behind the mask of the storyline and see some of the, warts and all character, like elements of the characters. I thought this one was really good. I like this type of storyline. We're seeing a lot of it, especially now with some of the independent books that we're reading. But this was very much along those same lines, and I would be more than interested in reading the four issues. So I like this one too.
Chris?
I loved it. Desperate Housewives meets the Justice League. Had a little bit of Garth Ennis in there. Without the dirty stuff, it worked for me.
Keith, your thoughts?
I didn't like it. I think I'm feeling like a bit overdone on the post-superhero, if superheroes were real people, subgenre. And that's been around for a long time, certainly. I mean, Watchmen is that 25 years ago. But I don't know. I hit this one, and I was like, this kind of thing again, like superheroes having an affair. And, what if they were really superheroes? What would they be like? And I just felt like it was kind of done. So it's a well done book. The art is well put together. There's nothing specific that I don't think it's badly produced. Just I feel like I've read this story so many times.
Okay, I feel like I haven't read this story so many times, and maybe that's why I enjoyed it a great deal more. Also, I thought the art was actually a little bit inconsistent, panel to panel and page to page. That would be my only complaint about the book. I loved this book, absolutely. It's playing with the DC archetypes again. So I'm reading this, and I'm thinking about the Spectacular, the Red 10 from Comics Tribe. And I'm thinking, now they're also taking these known characters for me and twisting them, much like Comics Tribe is doing. And I thought, if I could get Comics Tribe, the Red 10 bimonthly with this bimonthly, and keep these two books going, I would just love that. It's not quite at the same quality of the Red 10, but it's pretty damn close. I'm going to move on to Zombie Outlaw.
Can I respond to Keith's review there
for a
second? I just thought, personally, that this was not superheroes acting as real people. This was superheroes acting as soap stars, which is completely new. definitely. Unless you count Fantastic Four, Grey's Anatomy, exaggerated style off the characters in their real life identities. I truly think it was fresh. I think you're misreading it there, Keith.
Keith, respond.
I'm entitled to your to my opinion, and my opinion is that you're not entitled to your opinion.
Fair enough.
Excellent. It's the one Keith.
Okay. Well. All right. I'm gonna move on to our last review of the week. Zombie Outlaw, as I say, Zombie Outlaw is a book that, of course, we had the creators on it with an interview last week, and here we're actually just going to all four of us talk about the book a little bit more in depth. To me, it felt a little bit like the fantastic independent book Wolf and Bird, but also with a little bit of Scooby-Doo mixed in. I think this is a really, really fun book. To me, this is what I love about independent books, when they are simply free to tell their storyline without any parameters, but don't feel the necessary to try and do more, try and be more than they are. Just tell a good story. Just have good fun art, good fun characters, good fun storyline. This was a hell of a lot of fun. I really, really enjoyed it, and I want to thank them for sending us a preview copy. Keith.
I like the story. I wasn't much for the art style. I did like the, you know, what would you call it, Degrassi Junior High storyline going on in the book. The art was, and it was a bit, I don't know, cartoony, I guess is the only word I can think of.
I like just, that about it.
You know, the exaggerated style. Well, you like what you like, and I like what else.
And what I like, so yeah, you don't have a right to like what you like. Isn't that how this worked?
Oh, it's far too late for that.
Oh, damn it.
I said it first and better. But I did like the story, I'd be curious to see where it's going to go. I think they're playing around. They're certainly, yeah, I do say there is a lot of fun. I see what you mean there. Yeah, I'll be curious to see if the arc grows on.
Chris, what do you think?
Okay, zombies, cowboys, you kind of got me at the get-go. It kept me. I do have a criticism. The entire book, every panel, I was wondering if Popeye was going to show up. The forearms in this book drove me absolutely crazy. I like art as long as they showed nothing below the elbow, man. These people have huge arms. Drove me absolutely mad. But, I mean, that's a stylistic choice. I'm bringing my own baggage to it. I watch Popeye cartoons way more than I should, so I probably shouldn't be even mentioning this, but it drove me absolutely mad.
Your thoughts, Brett?
Well, it's funny, of course, because Ben brought the Popeye arms up during the interview, because that was one of those stylistic choices that he did make. But, you know, for me, when I first started reading the book, I thought the writing was really funny. Like, this book actually did make me laugh out loud, and most books don't do that. Now, when I looked at the art, I was just like, oh, really? Oh, I just don't know if I can do this. But I think as I progressed through, because of the story, because of the amount of fun that they were having, because of the references, because of all the stuff that they jammed into it, you know, I found that I kind of started to grow into the art. Now, I think that the art was a little more basic, a little less than they were hoping for. And I think that, you know, as we go along with it, I expect to see the art kind of grow into the book and just kind of evolve to suit the complete storyline. But I mean, as far as the story goes, I thought it was great. And as far as the idea of zombies, I thought it was great. Zombies in school, pretty funny. And again, cowboys and zombies and lots of hijinks. Hey, I mean, that's a total winner for me. So I absolutely want to see where this book is going.
All right, Brett, let's go with the plugs, and let's not forget to plug those creators.
For Zombie Outlaw, I'm going to plug Ryan Apodaca. He's the writer, and I'm going to plug Benny Jordan. He's the artist. And when I say he's the artist, he does all the art Like, he does everything from start to finish. So that's why this book takes a while to come out. Brian is on Twitter. He is Captain underscore Midnight. So that's C-A-P-N underscore Midnight. He's an interesting guy. I absolutely suggest you talk to him and listen to our last interview. Anyways, for me, I'm Brett, B-R-E-T-T, Brett underscore WeTalk, and Brett at WeTalkPodcast.com. Again, there's still a ton of stuff going on, and eventually it's going to start coming out, and when it does, it's probably going to be like opening the floodgates, but that's just the way it is. So anyways, I think for now, that's good for me.
Plugs, Chris.
Got nothing. It all depends on what we're doing next episode. Actually, what I have announced, which hasn't been decided. But I'm Chris at WeTalkPodcast.com, and you can follow me on Twitter. I've actually been really looking at the Twitter lately. So I'm Chris at Chris underscore WeTalk. Please check me out there.
And I am Cub Reporter K on Twitter. I'm Keith at WeTalkPodcast.com to give me an email. And what I've got coming up is that I will be starting to do some comic reviews on Comicosity.com. So check them out and check out what I'll be writing about, which you may or may not hear on here as well.
Hey, I'm hoping these reviews will be doing for them. Will they also be posted on our site?
We'll see how it goes.
Okay. All right. Well, I enjoy your writing a lot, Keith. So I hope no matter what, I'll follow it there if it's not. But hopefully, it'll be on both. Keith has written some excellent blogs in the past. I suggest everybody check out. And Chris has a concept for a blog that when he gets to that, I think will be kicking ass. And hopefully we'll see that. I also want to mention We Talk Wrestling, of course, and we had Addy on. And while he was a little bit of a douche here today, he's a little bit of a douche there too, but it's funny as hell. I just edited together our first 45 episodes, 6 hours best of available. It'll be available in 6 hours and in two parts for 3 hours. And I don't care if you're a wrestling fan. If you just want to laugh, this is as funny as anything on the internet, in my opinion. And there's a reason why We Talk Wrestling is the number one sports show and among the top podcasts and the hottest wrestling podcast going on the web today, on the interweb, as I like to call it. I also want to give a shout out to Joe Mulvey for his interview with us last week as well. And that was funny. You're going to be looking out for about a 40 to 45 minute bloopers section. We're going to call it bloopers, outtakes, and opinions. And that'll be coming from Joe as soon as I have the energy to edit some more. That is going to be great. Everybody will laugh. Trust me. And also, I just want to give a shout out to Adam Ryland. He created a video game. It's called Comic Book Hero: The Greatest Cape. Essentially, it's almost like a text-based game, but basically what it is if any of you ever played the old D&D, but you played the superhero ones, the Marvel one, the DC ones, it's kind of like that. You can mod it as well or just go and do the universe they've created. But every action you have and every way you interact with the people in the city and everything that you do and the relationships you create, the game reacts to you. The AI is awesome. Reacts back and creates a universe that reacts to the universe you're creating through your texts and your actions and how you present yourself. Is a really fun game. It doesn't have the action or the graphics of something like Batman Arkham Asylum, but as far as immersion, it's just pure fun. I think it's even better. So it's available from Grey Dog Software. It's created by Adam Ryland. It's $24.95, and I really hope go download the demo and give that a try. I think everybody will love it. So other than that, Mo, M-O underscore WeTalk, and Mo at WeTalk Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and very proud of this show, proud of We Talk Comics. So very proud of these guys. And like, I just want to mention, of course, the passing of Davy Jones. We're going to drop in a song from him here. Girl, Davy Jones, what a voice. What a voice. And so he will absolutely be missed as well. O-U-T. Me.
to me with your smile. Hit it, girl. I'm telling you, girl, something unknown to me makes you what you are. And what you are is all that I want for me. And it's good to feel that way, girl. Thank you, girl, for making the morning brighter, girl, for making the nighttime nicer, girl, for making a better world for me. I'm telling you, girl, something unknown to me makes you what you are, and what you are is all that I want for me. And it's good to feel that way, girl. Thank you, girl, for making the winter warmer, girl, for making the music softer, girl, for making a better world for me. Me.